Belmont is also going to make another presentation.
Oh, okay. Okay. Thank you very much, DG. I think, as I said before, that we are going to listen from you, written by the Department of Environmental Affairs, by this protocol. I don't want to waste time, because the minister is also going to come. Maybe there are some issues that we wanted to share with the minister, but not now. Thank you. I'll hand over to the department.
The DDG and the chief health will lead the presentation. So Dr. Moscomo will start with the ratification of the Nagoya Protocol on access to the NHL.
So, according to the program, honourable members, we are going to start with the Nagoya Protocol. That is bullet number 3. Is that right, ne?
Yes.
And then from bullet number 3, we'll come back to bullet number 2. Okay. We'll start from bullet number 3. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, DG. DG, chairperson, members of the committee. I will lead the presidential delegation on the Nagoya Protocol.
Sorry. Do they receive all members have got all the documents? Okay.
Accept the agenda.
Yeah. Okay, we'll get it.
Thank you, Chair. In terms of taking the committee through this protocol, I'll start with the outline of the presentation, how we plan to talk to the committee today. First, we will look at the tackles of the protocol itself, and we will talk a little bit on the national context towards the protocol, and we will attempt to give the committee some background as to the event leading up to this meeting today, and we will also give the committee a briefing on the status of the Nagoya Protocol on access and benefit sharing, specifically looking at the international context as well as the national context. We also plan to talk on the intention to ratify and the benefit of ratification.
Okay, sorry, I see the hand. Sorry, I was trying to glad that I'm there.
Sorry, sir, in order to follow the routine, what does Nagoya mean?
Starting from the expression about the Nagoya, okay.
Just to explain Nagoya itself, Chair, there's something in the presentation, but Nagoya is a city in Japan where this protocol actually was conceived and emanated from. But there's something on the presentation of that as well. Thank you, honourable member, for that question. I was just wrapping up on how we plan to proceed with the committee today. And I was talking on point number 5. Maybe I should start. We'll talk about the purpose, the national context of this protocol in relation to our country. Some background on that, Chair, linked to the honourable member's question. We'll talk about where things are now, the status at this moment of this protocol, and zooming into the international and national context levels. And we'll talk to the intention to ratify some benefit for this country to ratify the protocol. And we will put across conclusions from our side and what we are asking from the community. That's how we'll proceed. In terms of the purpose, why we are sitting here today with the community, first, we are here to provide the select committee with some background on this protocol. And specifically, we would like to look at the access to genetic resources and the fair and equitable share of benefits that are being derived from our genetic resources. We are also here to brief the committee on the status of the Nagoya Protocol, as I've said, and the intention for South Africa to ratify this protocol. And lastly, our purpose here today is to request the Select Committee to recommend to the National Assembly ratification of this protocol by the Republic. That's why we're here today. Next slide, please. Chair, let me give a bit of a national context around this protocol, if you may. Well, this protocol really stems from the NIMBA, Act, specifically Chapter 6, which really starts us off by talking about access to sharing of benefits derived from genetic resources of our country. The Act also talks to us about what bioprospecting is. It defines that for us and leads us into what phases of bioprospecting are critical to consider. It also talks to us about the need for agreement for access and benefit sharing amongst and between parties that are involved in bioprospecting. And it emphasizes the need to properly identify the beneficiaries across the board from benefiting of on our genetic resources. And let me point out, members of the committee, that to date, the department has, in fact, the minister has signed APEMs in relation to bioprospecting and benefit sharing of our genetic. And this protocol is really supported by an array of legislation, as indicated there. Anything from NIMA, NIMPA, the Patent Amendment Act, the Indigenous Knowledge Policy, the Agricultural Conservation and Resource Act, the Forest Act, various provincial ordinances, as well as the toxin scientists regulations established by NIMBA. I think the Honourable Member's question now starts to get into gear. He was asking about Nagoya. The next slide talks to us about the actual background to this protocol. Well, the Nagoya Protocol is effectively an international agreement which was adopted in the city of Nagoya, Japan, in 2010. That's where it all started. It all started there in 2010 in Nagoya. And I'd like, Chair, to read the actual objective of this protocol word by word. It is the fair and equitable sharing of the benefits arising from the utilization of genetic resources, including by appropriate access to genetic resources and by appropriate transfer of relevant technologies, taking into account all the rights over those resources and to the technologies, and by appropriate funding, thereby contributing to the conservation of biological diversity and the sustainable use of its components. That's the word-by-word objective of this protocol. However, the negotiations on this protocol started 5 years before Nagoya. It started back in 2005, following the World Summit on Sustainable Development in 2002 that was held here in South Africa. That's where the first call came about the need to look at some international agreement or regime that looks into regulating our genetic resources. So in 2002, it came to the table, and in 2005, the actual negotiation started, and it was adopted in 2010. The call was then later on reiterated by access and beneficiary of genetic resources. And some of the key contentious issues that dominated discussions and negotiations at that time included the question around the technology transfer in relation to the acquisition of our genetic resources, the question of the respect of various laws in country was also a hot issue. The capacity building, there was recognition that many of the countries have not engaged in issues of genetic resources before, and so there was an issue around capacity building, the controls, how all of this is going to be controlled, and also issues that were looked at retrospectively, some of the things that were already happening, so what should be agreed upon by things that are already happening. Obviously the question of access, and lastly the question of how the benefits will be shared. Next slide, please. Next slide. Thank you. So in terms of where things stand now in relation to the Nagoya Protocol, first I'll talk at two different levels, the international level and the national level. Internationally, the protocol events and developments were opened for signature by the parties to the Convention on Biodiversity for a period of a year between February 2011 and 2012 in New York at the UN headquarters. And to date, we have some 92 countries that have signed the protocol globally. And South Africa, our minister signed the protocol on the 11th of May, 2011. And currently the protocol has been ratified by a total of 5 countries. The protocol will be enter into force on the 90th day after the date of deposit of the 50th instrument of ratification acceptance, accession or approval. Carrying on the status, I will now drop down to the national level. At the national level, what we have done as the department, we have first of all sought a legal opinion, various legal opinions in relation to South Africa taking on this protocol. The first one was sought from the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development with a view to see whether this protocol, ratification of this protocol, will conflict with any of our domestic laws, and the result was that from the Justice Department was that it does not conflict. Secondly, we sought an opinion from the Department of International Relations and Cooperation to look at whether the protocol is technical, administrative, or executive. And the result was that it is none of the above. The Department of Environmental Legal Team itself applied its capacity onto the protocol, and it was also established that it does not, ratification does not conflict with any of our environmental laws today. Just to wrap up on the national level detail is that on the 4th of September, earlier this month, the department then presented the protocol to the Portfolio Committee on Water and Environment, at which stage it was then recommended by the committee for ratification to be processed further, hence we are presenting it here today. So that's essentially what happened at both levels, at the international and national levels. The next slide then talks to the intention to ratify and what were some of the consultation processes that we entered into as a to the present moment. Naturally, we engaged a host of interested parties, various stakeholders, constituencies, and so forth. And we did this through engaging business community, the civil society in general, NGOs, relevant national and provincial entities, and relevant national and provincial government departments. We also had a lot of input, as you can imagine, from research institutions, academic institutions, where played a big role in this, and we consulted beyond borders and talked to fellow African stakeholders, as well as within the SADC itself. So consultation in terms of stakeholders was quite broad. Well, having explained how we undertook the process and who we talked to solicit input into the protocol, perhaps it's befitting that we talk a little bit about the benefits that we believe will derive from our country ratifying this protocol. First, we have a strong belief that ratification will enhance the sharing of benefits from the use of our genetic resources. And we are mindful that much of these resources have been utilized by our communities as well. So we recognize the importance of traditional knowledge that communities hold in relation to most of these natural resources. So we believe that by ratification of this protocol, we will enhance a fair and equitable share across the board. Secondly, we believe that the ratification will strengthen the compliance and enforcement, particularly of implementation of the Nagoya Protocol and access to benefits to genetic material once the material has left the country. During negotiations, as I said, part of the deliberations was around international organizations negotiating to acquire our genetic material and living shores. So we believe by ratifying this, we will begin as a country to get a hold of and control the movement and regulate how our genetic material are being utilized, whether in country or outside of the country. We also believe that ratification will strengthen the national implementation in terms of making sure communities and other stakeholders fairly benefit from utilization of our natural resources. There will also be a contribution to research and development in various sectors such as pharmaceuticals, cosmetics, nutraceuticals, agriculture, and so forth. We believe there will be a good enhancement in these sectors, depending on what sort of materials are being bioprospected. And we are looking forward to the benefits of technology transfer. Other countries in the world have advanced a great deal in terms of this area, and we're hoping by ratifying the protocol and being able to play the same game with all countries, whether they have been in the game longer, we will enhance our technology transfer and skills as well. And lastly, Chair, we are looking to benefits that relate to enhancement of socio-economic development in country, things like job creation, creation of new SMMEs, or even supporting sense of anthropology. In simple language, I'll use the term we know. It's about mining a plant or an animal. You also heard him referring to genetic resources. When you take a plant, you boil it, you drink the. It's not wild prospecting. Once you start processing a plant, using the genes to produce something for your face or for cough or something, that's what is called bioprospecting. We are using the genetic resources, the genes of it. Most of the plants that are used for now, the plants you referred to, there's an issue around Woodia. Woodia is for is suppressing the. You also have industry, Weibos and Honeybush industry. You also have Skeletium, it's a mood enhancer. We have already, it was signed in 2009 between the Spain Council and the department. They already produced the medicine, which has been approved by the Medicinal Council, even in the US, and safe to use. You also have Pelagonia, which is harvested in Eastern Cape. You also have Anopheros, the Kana, which is also harvested. Those are the key plants that are used. You also have Galvos in Northern Cape. I think two weeks ago, Minister signed another permit with the pharmaceutical company and the people of Northern Cape. Thank you.
I'm noting that in your document, it's still in the presentation, it says portfolio. But in my document, it says select. So I think the technology between the office and the career has already in that regard. So it's in my document, select. So we apologize for that. Yeah. Okay, thank you.
We usually know that we don't be recognized. The committee that are recognized as portfolios.
You know, if you don't consider this, we will not be
exactly. Exactly. Okay, thank you. Thank you very much. Honorable members, that is the presentation that we got. I think I will open for discussion and questions and clarity. I see Honorable Mporo, I see Honorable Makubela, I see Honorable Nell. Okay, come on, start on the. With.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. I have two questions, but I think the presenters sense that I was going to ask those questions. They started immediately explaining, explaining what it means, the issue of bioprospecting and the issue of genetic resources. I have an inkling idea now, but one would like to hear more. If you can come and workshop us probably on these issues, I would like it in that manner, because really this is a very technical thing.
Absolutely.
And it needs to go down to the understanding of the people to make them understand, and before this committee could make recommendation as we are being asked to do, one would like really to understand these things. But on the other hand, the Chair, I would also like to know in society which sections of our society pollute more, and is attention being paid to that section? And if attention is being paid, what attention it is? That is my first question.
Thanks, Sir President. I wonder if I had properly. I had about 93 countries, and of those 93, I'm sure only 5 countries ratified. Why the number is so small, bigger, and then we want to join the 5 ourselves now. Can you come out clear? Thanks.
Honorable
Honest.
Okay, let me step on. Okay.
Thank you, Chair. I think my answer also. here is because I just want to check on the contentious issues which are listed here. Technology transfer, capacity building, controls method. Probably those are quite well, since I see from my perspective, our region in terms of engagement, our region as a country or department. I really want to take one out as the issue of capacity building and singling out. But I just check in terms of on your benefit classification, your last bullet is dealing with the enhancement of socio-economic development. Also refers to SME. On your last bullet. I'm just checking chapter 7 is the issue is the SME section just put in as a by the way or are they part of the package of the benefit of this products which will come out of this or the benefit in terms of sharing. Thank you, chapter.
Okay. Another question?
Thanks, Chair. Yes, to the department, I just wanted to ask with regard to biological research, pharmaceuticals, cosmetics, that sort of thing. The rooibos tea industry, I'm using this as an example. We had to battle to get the rights back for that because they were owned by an American or somebody who had got patent rights to that. And we had to then get those patent rights back here. How does this affect patent rights if somebody discovers some herbal medicine or whatever and takes it out of patent outside the country? That's number one. Number two. Also, what happens if somebody takes a plant or a herb and grows it in a suitable climate elsewhere, but you know it's been taken here? How will this protocol, how will this
protect that? Thanks, Jeff. Okay. Thank you very much. I think, me, I want to align myself with Honorable Mkhoro to say that this is, we need to put workshops with this before, and we know, must know it fairly, how is it works. Because now we will ask maybe some questions that is not in line with the presentation, but we need it to know. Okay, I'll hand over for the department to answer the questions and clarify.
Thank you, members.
Yes.
Thank you, Chair. I will take part of the inquiries and we can take them on that part.
Okay.
On the question of SMEs, whether it's by the way, or are we being serious about this? The response from us is it's part of it's really part of the conditions of the permit that is being issued to that. The prospective bioprospector must indicate what benefits what sort of benefits are being provided for either a community where the particular specimen is found, taking into account questions of land rights and laws of land and so forth. But from the few permits that we have dealt with so far, what's coming out is that a lot of groupings or communities are in fact constituting themselves as a company, a small company, SME as well. If one looks at the sort of levels of our permit, we channel the permit applicants to specifically say what is being done in relation to the support or even new creation of SMEs. So they can't really get away from that. It's part of what they must fill out on the permit. position of MMEC comes out very strong. If not in service, it's part of the application. Mr. Mketeni will take the other issues, but in terms of why so far we have only five countries that have ratified this, when one looks at the timeline in terms of when things started, we as a country signed this in last year, only last year. Remember there was that open period of a year between 2010 and 2011 where 92 countries just signed. And in terms of ratification is a bit of a lengthy process, national process. As I've explained in my presentation, there's a serious stakeholder engagement that has to happen. And all of that really takes time. And if really you ask me that am I happy with the five, so far I say yes, actually it's good progress given how long the ratification process must take place in each country. So five is not bad so far. We ourselves are only here now to talk to you about ratification. As we speak today, some of our, at least one member of our parliament and one of our technical officials is both in the Seychelles. There's a workshop on this protocol where there's an attempt to raise awareness, more awareness among the parliamentarians on the Nagoya Protocol, so that countries can begin to move forward faster with the ratification. But the record as it stands for five is actually not a bad record, given that the protocol is really new. I'm comfortable with the five. I hope we can go faster. I'll ask Mr. Mketeni to also fill in the gaps on the other inquiries.
Thank you, Chair. Let me take the two questions. One was by the honourable member around which sections of the society are getting attention. What we've seen so far, the holders of indigenous knowledge, they get attention. Because if you say this muti is good for cough, it's the knowledge coming from a certain group of people. Therefore, that's what this legislation is trying to protect and recognize. Therefore, those people are getting attention. What we are doing now, because there's some contention around who holds indigenous knowledge, there are even people start to challenge the department. Now we are continuing with the research to understand where is this indigenous knowledge coming from. We even go as far going to the archives. I remember last year, December, I chaired a meeting between the Sand Council and the industry people, Honeybush and Rainbow, whereby the industry are saying, this knowledge is not from you, from the Sand people. Sand people are saying, it's our knowledge. Therefore, you still get those debates. But what we're doing now, well, we need to research this before we finally sign Honeybush, Rainbow, Send people agreement. The other group are the users of this. If I may make an example, honorable members, when I grew up, my aunt used to cut aloesep. And then they would be truck come to the village. They love these baguettes. They will pay them whatever 50 cents those days. They disappear. We never knew where this aloe goes. Now we're starting to bite those companies. Because no company can enter a village, cut the aloe without benefit sharing agreement. But what they do, they take that, they trade them 1 rand, they make millions and export the aloe. Therefore, those people who are cutting the aloe, like those are dependent on, are also getting attention of the department. The other group are the landowners. Because the way we structure agreements, you get an agreement to access that village. There was an agreement to say, this company wants to enter that fence, belong to those people. There must be an access agreement signed by the minister. The second agreement is the actual bioprospecting. What are you going to do when you bioprospect? And then the other one is benefit sharing agreement. A company must disclose how much money it's going to make, what is the percentage share will go to the communities. There's also upfront payment. Like, for example, when we did Skeletia, the company paid $2 million upfront to the Sand Council. When Minister signed Adawan when Grant was in Northern Cape, there was an upfront payment of $2 million and plus 50% sharing once the proceeds are starting to come up. Therefore, those are the people that are getting our attention so far, plus the fossil companies. This question leads to the issue of research and patents. I think I'll combine this one with the financial issues that was asked by Honourable Member. The issue of retrospectiveness was on the table because these resources have gone already. You'll go to England and see a plan that belongs to this country. That's why it took almost 9 years of negotiations. Compromises were made. Therefore, the issue of respectiveness is not, you cannot do respectiveness. Therefore, you need to start when this protocol was signed. That's the unfortunate part. But it was very, very contentious. When you come and access the resources, the process, there are two phases. You have a phase, what you call a research phase. If you say, in this plant, as a pharmaceutical company, I see places of a thing that can chop AIDS or whatever. We need to have a research phase. Do research with us in the country. You tell us what you're finding. We must find an agreement, that phase. The next phase, once you found what you want, you must tell us. We call that phase commercial phase, where you start saying, I will make money from this because I've seen the places that I need. The next one is the actual bioprospecting and benefit sharing. Hence, he was saying, we are going to benefit in terms of research because it's going to enhance our knowledge. For that information must be left behind to this country to know more about our genetic resources. Going back to the issue of if it's going to that country, how do you make sure it's not transferred to the next person to the next person? The reason there was a legally binding regime was for that purpose. In the agreement, if I'm an exporter exporting to Germany, the company in Germany cannot transfer that thing to another company. Therefore, the issue of this is a legally binding regime is binding all the states to this protocol. Hence, some are slow in ratifying because they want to understand implications. This is why ourselves, we went to DELCO, Justice, and to check what are the implications for us. We realized there are no implications. Fortunately for South Africa, even before this debate, we started developing our own legislation. Therefore, countries are learning from us because we're worried that people were ripping off the communities already. Hence, we developed our legislation even before the protocol. And when we were negotiating, we had an advantage in South Africa because we had our own knowledge. We had our own national legislation. That's why you see under contentious issues, there was a bullet that says respect of national laws. Because companies from developed countries, they wanted to come and take and not respect our national laws. Therefore, each company comes here has to respect our own legislation. These were the issues that were contentious in the deliberations.
Okay. Yes, of course.
It's a follow-up question.
Yes.
Let's say sometimes you get a group just like India. One comes and make a research, collect a research. And when going to open that a company, it said only one company cannot transfer. What about the grandson, the Mufundi, and what? Because it is a family thing, and then it broadened that company. Like India, or how they do the business. How will you prevent?
I think the key in terms of what the presentation also was the fact that this protocol is supported by national legislation, which is the National Biodiversity Act, but also other laws. BTI has got a patent laws, and therefore the issues of trade are controlled within that legal regime. So whether you are a family, if you are going to continue to produce and use, you are having to then adhere to the rules as outlined in the patent patent legislation. I also thought I should, and that also is in alignment with the Department of Science and Technology policy on management of indigenous knowledge systems and all the other laws like the Forestry Act and so on. So we have, as South Africa, we have good legal base to facilitate this area of work. And of course, where there is certain challenges, I guess then that's why we have courts of laws to then help us resolve some of the issues that are not quite clear in legislation. And I think with implementation, we are also going to learn as we proceed. And Ms. Nketeni was also then indicating the importance of the international law and even our national law. There is no retrospective. Law is not retrospective. At the date of it coming into effect, that is when you then look at how you handle processes in the future, not completely in the past. I also just thought, Chair, I must also further respond to the question that was raised about, I think Mr. Nketeni referred to who benefits, but also the question was which sections of our society pollute more. It was about pollution. And what attention is being paid in that regard. I thought I should probably give a response that says that the country, we do have a legislation that allows us to define what pollutants should we be managing in order to preserve and conserve the environment. So we have different pollutants which affect air quality, soil and land contamination resulting from pollution, water bodies get polluted, wetlands, rivers, and so on. So we have existing laws now, both in dealing with the air, we have Air Quality Act, which allows us as a country to set ambient air quality standards to define which priority areas should be tackled as polluting the air. For instance, we have the high felt priority area where we have more of the air pollution arising from the various industries. And also that is the Mpumalanga area and also in the Vaal area in Gauteng. So we have already done work to prevent and reduce the continuation of that. Communities, in terms of how people make fire, they want a campaign to make sure that there is limited domestic air pollution as a result of certain practices. When you make fire from coal or wood, there is a certain campaign that was beginning to give capacity building and knowledge to community. citizens and citizens on how best to prevent indoor air pollution. On soil and land, our Waste Act land contamination. Our Waste Act has got a whole chapter that deals with how we should handle land contamination. And on the water provision side, Water Affairs has got mechanisms to which it then controls pollution of water, and at least drinking water quality standards are in place, as well as the sewer water quality that must still be treated in order to minimize the impact on the environment and on the contribution that it makes to diseases that impact on the public health system. So I thought I should just highlight that we do have mechanisms that are legislated that then allow us to respond to the various pollution aspects, whether it's the air, medium, the land, and or soil, and so on.
Thank you. Thank you. Just a little question on the report. What monitoring and evaluation system are in place to monitor the permit issues?
Just a follow-up question, Chair.
Okay, yes. Yes,
Here I go. Yeah, thank you, Madam, for the explanation.
Let me welcome the yes. Welcome to the committee. You have been introduced, and
yes, I did indicate that Ms. Judy Berman was joining a little late, and here is Ms. Kay Bromida from the Minister.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay, welcome. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, I was saying thank you very much for the explanation you have given on the who pollutes and what attention has been paid there. My follow-up question is, you know, when you go around the country, you go to, especially in the urban areas, and more so in the township, the black township, you really find a disgusting that you sometimes ask yourself, do we really have a system of governance? Now, my question will be directed to the department, which is the responsible department, as to whether there is no possibility that a Department of Environmental Affairs can come with the legislation which actually compels the local government municipalities to have in their system a section that deals specifically with the environment, to keep the environment clean, and that will actually compel the municipality to do so. I am of the opinion that I think this would be the relevant department to come with something like that, and not only make a legislation and put it there on the shelves, but even to go out and engage in parliament, to go out to the communities to educate them about the need to keep the environment clean. That's my question.
Okay, thank you. I think we have got exhausted. I think after this question we must go to President Long, then we've got the other long in the agenda.
Oh.
Okay. Yeah.
I will attend the one about monitoring the information. What we did firstly to evaluate permits that are submitted, Minister is also provided for in the regulations, established a panel of experts, which is a complex process to evaluate an application. Therefore, we don't do ourselves officials. There's that panel of experts that sits depending on the number of applications on the table. They go through them. Because of the complexity, some may even take a year. Because before you say who must benefit, who is this company, you must research the whole cycle and understand who's involved. That's the first one. The
The second one, each permit has got a number. Therefore, we have a database in order to monitor. Because at the end of the day, we need to be able to say how lucrative is this industry. Why are you now investigating that lucrativeness? Because nobody understands. There are people sitting in the corner of South Africa with these resources. We don't know how big. We cannot put a figure now. We can put figures on the venue. But at the end of the day, what would you say? This thing is worth so many billions of rands in the future. We also, in the Regulation and Act, have clauses for enforcement. Therefore, enforcement of compliance regarding the people stealing the resources, the people taking these things illegally, is also part of our enforcement system. Therefore, we have a panel of experts, we have a database, we are also doing enforcement. Like in the Eastern Cape, there was a lot of stealing of pelargonium illegally. Mm-hmm. Therefore, enforcement officials are also busy stopping those illegal activities.
Okay. Thank you. Concluding our responses, one, I think we would welcome an opportunity to workshop the committee when you have the time in order for us to clarify more on this concept, including the issues of how best are we, what programs we have to prevent pollution, to provide information as well as create awareness to communities and even local government sphere. We do have a system of governance that is outlined both in law in respect to responding to the constitutional obligations that this function, it being a concurrent function between national and the provincial sphere of government, but also there are the Section 24B of the Constitution outline the functions that should be undertaken at local government level. And we have a system that then helps those municipalities through bylaws that talks to the national legislation. We've had capacity building programs. We've had to help the municipalities to prepare model bylaws to minimize pollution incidents in the various municipalities. However, I think, as you correctly indicated, Honourable Member, that there are quite a number of townships and some urban areas that are quite filthy and not quite responsive to what we need to make sure we put in place in respect of the duty of care and make sure that there is a response that prevents the pollution of the environment. And some of the areas where we have intervention, but our resources are also limited, but we can do more with other possibilities of partnerships with NGOs, partnerships also when Parliament takes the message to the community, we should then be able to reinforce those programs of Parliament. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Dichi. We exhausted a lot of time in this. I think now we're left only with 1 hour, 30 minutes for this three, because this is the last meeting for our term, so we need to also adopt our minutes and everything. So I'll give 30 minutes for each, and then we must get to other people. Exhausted a lot of time in this one. Okay. And I think for we need to, but we are waiting for one member to come to adopt. But let's continue. Maybe on the way is going to come in for the second one. Which one are we going to?
We are doing the African Convention on Conservation of Nature.
The last one is the next.
Thank you, Chair. We will follow.
Only 30 minutes.
Chair, we have the background, the outline. We have background, main objectives of this, what is status, strategic focus, how do we plan to implement, what are the implications for South Africa, whom have we consulted, and also the recommendation which is similar to the previous presentation. Next slide. The This is called an African convention. It is intended to look at the continent-wide instrument for conservation of Africa's natural resources. It used to be called Algiers Convention. It dates back 1968. And the convention was revised and adopted by the AU in Maputo of July 2003. But yet to come into force. Again, in order to come into force, it needs the number of countries to ratify it. Next slide. What are the main objectives? I must say, honorable members, it is about everything. If you look at it, it's about water, soil, utilization, enforcement. It's about all the natural resources of Africa. It is about improvement of soil, land use, utilization, water, pollution that we talked about, water use, overgrazing, protection of plants and animals, control of trafficking of trophies. It will also cover the issues of rhino poaching that is facing us, and also the conservation of customary rights within the convention. Next slide. What is the current status? By April 2012, only 35 countries have signed the revised convention. Only 9 countries had acceded or ratified the convention. Therefore, still a long way to go in order to reach a certain number. Convention only enters into force 30 days after the deposit of the 15th instrument of ratification. Therefore, we need more countries to ratify, and then we'll say it is into force. We signed the convention in April 2012 in Addis Ababa. Now we are here to proceed with ratification. Hence on the 4th, we were with the portfolio committee. Today, with it, we are with the select committee so that we can go to the National Assembly with the process. South Africa also intends to encourage other African states to ratify the convention so that it can come into force. The strategic focus, we were the chair or the president of AMSEN. The 12th session of the AMSEN on environment encourage African countries to ratify or accede to the revised convention. Where, as I said, with the former president of AMSEN, 2008 and 2010, but we still need to ratify. Signing of the convention by South Africa may encourage other African states to do so, and the potential positive legacy for South African presidents of AMSEN. We also have now our ex-minister who's also in the AU. Therefore, there's some credibility that we can bring to the process. SA ratification of the convention will strengthen the continent's drive to conserve its natural resources. Next slide. Many African countries are already signatories of other conventions which are similar to this. Because we have the Convention on Biological Diversity, we have the Convention on Desertification, we have the Convention on Climate Change. Therefore, all of those are also intended to protect our environment. Therefore, benefits of African Convention covering these issues have been questioned. People are saying, why Africa are you doing this? But our understanding is that African states wants to be able to say, we can talk to our African issues, hence we want our own convention. Convention does not have a dedicated secretariat, which could be a challenge, whereby they may be called for South Africa to host the secretariat, and then we have to pay the membership fees as a contribution, and also there are financial and capacity constraints likely to make this convention difficult to implement. Because other conventions, we have other big countries with lots of resources who are supporting the secretariat. Implementation plan for us, an interdepartmental committee will be established and tasked to develop a plan to implement convention. We will involve national departments, provinces, and relevant government agencies like your SANB and South African National Banks. What are the implications for this? There are issues of organizational and personnel. As I said, there's no secretariat for this convention, and the leadership role played by South Africa on the continent may imply or necessitate that South Africa dedicates human resources to provide secretariat, because there's this perception in Africa that South Africa can support everything and rescue the African continent, which is a perception out there. There is an implication for us, hence we are putting that there might be calls and requests for that. The UNEP Regional Offices for Africa and Arms and Africa can play a role in supporting the convention. Next slide. There are financial implications because we have to pay a membership fee that may range from $40,000 to $50,000 per year, which is part of the extrapolation in the UN system, because they look at the GDP and then they determine the scale for those fees. Again, the AU Commission might call upon South Africa to assist. We suspect that. Next slide. Communication. We need to communicate this. We have facilitated awareness nationally in South Africa with respect to this convention. Our department will have a media strategy conveying why this convention. Next slide. It also has implications for vulnerable groups, because the intention is to support conservation of natural resources in the continent, particularly the rural people who depend on the utilization of resources for their livelihoods. Next slide. There will be security implications, which will be positive for us, because it can strengthen interaction between the African states around cross-border movement of our natural resources. In our consultation with other organizations, we included many in the sector. A CAP memo presented to the African Renaissance Committee, and then we presented this thing to the International Cooperation, Trade and Security Cluster of DGs and ministers. Next slide. Therefore, I hear honorable members to for the select committee take note of this convention, and also recommend for ratification by South Africa. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, honourable members. Okay, I see honourable Makubela. Only one. Okay.
Thanks, Chairperson. I was struck by the name of death in the first bullet when you talk about the conservation and the few story erosion. But the fact is not, it's not just as I grew up in the olden days, you know yourself, where cattles or herders were not allowed to graze along the near the river or along the river, such type of I'm not saying, therefore, the front for Spoolen as arrogant. Okay, number two, the signing of the convention, but no, but the signing of the convention by South Africa may encourage other countries to do so. Why South Africa want to be seen as a role model for other countries? Number this financial implication. Financial implication. What is going to happen to a country which does not renew its membership after paying this for 40 or 50 thousand US dollars?
Okay.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Honourable, for the questions. Your first comment is correct, because it's around land management practices. I think in your reflection, you are also reflecting the traditional knowledge because you don't need to go to school to manage your land. Therefore, this one is an issue of awareness, and it's linked to issues of overpopulation and movement of people. It's the reality. And also it links to the history of the country.
Yeah.
Because some corners of Africa, that's where villages were concentrated. You see a lot of land cutting in Limpopo villages, Eastern Cape villages, and KwaZulu-Natal. That's the issue. But it's good to hear people still reflect to those. But there are programs that were running with the department to deal with issues of combating desertification. That's why there are programs called Working for Wetlands, Working for Water, Working on Fire, are geared to deal with the issues of soil erosion and land degradation. The another question about why South Africa, the ratification, the encouragement of Africa, is all about politics and how South Africa is posturing itself in the African continent. We are seen as the lead country situated in the southern deep of Africa to lead the African continent. We can make many examples. Therefore, by us ratifying, they would have said, South Africa signed, they would have signed. For them to ask us, why are you taking so much time to do this? Because we've been thinking hard about it. The other one, what about the country not paying dues? When you go to an international convention, I encourage all officials to do so. You go with an agenda. You go and pursue the agenda and the aspirations of South African people in a global platform. Therefore, you influence. Because you start taking your agenda to the continent and to the world. By not playing your dues, you will be failing your own people. Therefore, countries who are not paying the dues, they will be implicated in the rules of procedure of the convention. Because the starting point for the convention must develop rules of procedure on how it's going to run its business. Therefore, that one, it will come that who is not paying dues, therefore you cannot participate, therefore you cannot influence, and cannot vote on the decisions to be made. Thank you, sir.
Okay.
Thank you very much. I think you know the process. Which let
Chair, we am done. My colleague is here to do the other part.
Oh, all right.
Miss Tuti Bomoi.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you,
Honourable Chair. Now we'll do the International Environmental Agreement.
International Environmental Agreement.
Okay.
You know that we will give all the 30 minutes.
I will be short.
Okay. All right.
Okay. As short as possible, because Honourable Chair, it is quite a longish presentation. Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, there is in fact a document that accompanies the presentation. And I just wanted to check with... Okay. There is a document that will be brought, which accompanies the presentation. And it's a report which presents the presentation in more detail. Oh, you've got copies.
Yes.
All right. You've got copies. Great. Okay. Thank you very much. Honourable Chair, my name is Judy Beaumont. I am responsible for climate change and air quality management in the department. But today I've been asked to present to you, to present to the committee, the annual report on international environmental agreements that the department has been engaging in. This is a requirement in terms of Section 26. Of the National Environmental Management Act, in which, and that section of NEMA specifies that the Minister must report to Parliament once a year regarding international environmental issues for which she is responsible. And Honourable Members would be aware that there are many international environmental instruments that deal with chemicals, that deal with climate change, that deal with bio- like Africa, marine, etc. So this is an opportunity to have a very fast overview of what these various instruments are. I will start by giving a quick overview on the fourth slide of the different meetings that have been attended. And I will then do the oceans and coasts. Cindy will take over on the biodiversity. And then I will pick up on the chemicals and the other issues. So, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, you can see that under oceans and coasts there are a number of meetings that have been engaged in. There was the 34th Antarctic Treaty Consultative Meeting. There was the 23rd Annual General Meeting of the Council of Managers of the National Antarctic Programme. There was the 34th meeting of the scientific group at the London Convention, and I will go through each one of these in more detail as we get to the London Convention is about dumping the sea. There's also the 63rd meeting of the International Whaling Commission, and then a meeting of the Conservation of Antarctic Marine Living Resources. And the biodiversity, and GPG Pondy will go through this in more detail. There was the signing of the Nagoya Protocol. There's the signing of the Memorandum of Understanding on the Conservation of Migratory Sharks under the Convention of Migratory Species. There was the signing of an MOU on Promotion of South-South and Triangular Cooperation under the United Nations Convention on Biodiversity. There was the 10th session of the Conference of Parties to the United Nations Convention to Combat Diversification, and the 10th session of the COP of the Convention on Conservation of Migratory Species. So quite a mouthful, and the biodiversity section, a range of different conventions that deal with a range of different issues. And the climate change, of course, Honourable Members, would be very familiar with the 17th session of the United Nations Convention on Climate Change, COP15. Then there's a whole set of conventions that deal with chemicals and waste, and I'm now on slide 5. There's the Stockholm Convention on Consistent Organic Pollutants. There is the Rotterdam Convention on Prior Informed Consent, and that refers to consent between nations in the export and import of listed chemicals. The Basel Convention deals with the control of transboundary movements of hazardous waste, and the Vienna Convention and Montreal Protocol deals with ozone substances and protection of the ozone layer. And then finally, as part of the overview, there was the 19th session of the Commission on Sustainable Development, which was part of the CSD program, which had a series of focus areas, thematic areas, but also was part of the preparation for Rio+20. And then under the United Nations Environment Program, there was the Ministerial Environmental Forum, which takes place every 2 years and deals with environmental governance issues. And then there were the annual meetings of Africa, the Africa Union Summit, and the SADC, which was the Southern African or SADC Senior Officials Meeting. So, Honourable Members, that's a high-level overview, simply of the listing of the different the meetings that we're engaged in. And of course, under each of those, you would find that there's some subsets of meetings, preparatory meetings. So these are just the highlights. On oceans and coasts, then, in each case, what we will do is give you an indication of the strategic importance, the relevance to South Africa of each of these, touch on the key outcomes, and then touch on the actions, any actions that are required by South Africa in the follow-up. In most cases, these meetings take place annually, once a year, but in some cases, it's only every 2 years, so South Africa has some time in order to do the preparation. So, under oceans and coasts, in respect of multilateral agreement on which is the 34th Antarctic Treaty Consultative Meeting. This treaty deals with matters relating to the governance and protection of the Antarctic continent, and South Africa is one of the original signatories in this respect. And the key issue Section 6 to the Protocol on Environmental Protection in the Antarctic Area. And from a national perspective, legal processes have been put in place to ratify this annex. We're also in the process of developing a national policy on Antarctic tourism. This has become quite an issue in light of the fact that much of the tourism to Antarctica goes either by ship from Cape Town or by flight. In fact, 90 to 95% of tourism to the Antarctic departs from Cape Town. And then there is also the question of developing a position on bioprospecting in the Antarctic region. Of course, this is not only in respect of biodiversity protection, but also in respect of possible benefits to South Africa from bioprospecting. So South Africa is engaging strongly in those processes. In respect of the 23rd Annual General Meeting of the Council of Managers of the National Antarctic Programme, the strategic importance here is relates to the opportunity for national program and logistics managers who are operating in Antarctic to share knowledge on logistics issues such as transport in the Antarctic, or possible accidents or near misses that might have been taken place on a particular trip to the Antarctic. One of the actions here is for South Africa to replace its aging fleet of transport vehicles on the Antarctic, which there is concern in respect of the potential for accidents. Another of the issues is in relation to Cape Town's oil spill combating capability, because, as I've mentioned, all of the ships from all international parties or partners in the Antarctic depart from Cape Town. The slide 9 deals with the London Convention. This is the convention to prevent dumping at sea. And its strategic importance is, of course, to protect the marine environment from human activities through marine pollution prevention. Some of the issues here relate to, especially from a South African perspective, relate to how we deal with dredged material. For example, dredging, all of our harbours need continuous dredging, and the mud at the bottom needs to be disposed of, but it needs to be disposed of in an environmentally sound manner, and this is something that South Africa is looking into in respect of some kind of a permitting system. Another issue relates to the disposal of fish waste, and you can imagine that there's extensive fish waste that comes in on both of the fishing vessels, and once again it's about the safe and environmentally appropriate way of disposing and using new guidelines in this respect. And finally, there's an issue in relation to the movement of carbon dioxide across boundaries. You would be aware that this is becoming an issue, particularly in respect of the sequestration of carbon, or the burying of carbon at sea in a geologically appropriate area. This would mean that there has to be the transport of such CO2, and this would potentially go transboundary, and this is a discussion that's underway in relation to the London Convention. Under the Whaling Commission, the main issue there is about the protection of whales, of course, and legal arrangements in this respect. One of the outcomes relates to monitoring and mitigation plans for whale fatalities. Boat strikes are a big issue, or whale entanglement in fishing nets is a big contributor to whale fatalities, and this requires countries to make sure that they are at least monitoring this and putting in place whatever mechanisms need to be in place to protect whales. The other issues relate to a resolution that condemns any demonstration at sea that is a risk to human life. these are quite dramatic and radical demonstrations, and they do put human rights and property at risk, and the way the Commission is raising concerns in this respect. And the final issue was the role of the International Maritime Organization with respect to safety at sea. The final one on oceans and coasts is the Convention on the Conservation of Antarctic Marine Living Resources. And this is about highlighting issues of the threat, protection and conservation of biodiversity and resource use and ecosystem services in the context of in the context of Antarctica. Some of the key outcomes here relate to an effort to establish a marine protected area between Prince Edward Island and the island of Crozet, which is an island that belongs to France. So there are negotiations underway between South Africa and France to establish what is quite a huge marine protected area. South Africa, one of the key actions is that South Africa is currently working with countries such as Brazil, India, Chile, and a number of other countries to put together a proposal for funding through the Global Environment Facility for a capacity development application specifically in relation to conservation of Antarctic marine resources. I would like to pause there and ask DG Fundy to take over on the biodiversity slides. There's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 of them. And then I'll pick up with the climate change and Honourable Chair, I think we will be done in a second short one.
Okay. Honourable members, if you go to slide 13. Communities who are the accessors and users. want to fast track the ratification process so that we are ready. That's the process we are. That's the brief around the CPT on the lake of Nakonya. The next one, honorable members, is the sharks, which is the relationship between this slide and slide 17. This MOU is specifically talking about how do we conserve our sharks between range states, because sharks move up and down along the ocean. Therefore, if anything happens, for example, in Mozambique waters or in Namibian waters, it will affect our sharks. Therefore, all the states with that range signed this MOU to make sure that we conserve our sharks. This MOU is under the Convention on Migratory Species, which I'll explain in what is that in slide 17. Therefore, we signed the MOU, and then we participated in the development of the international plan, because there should be a plan that is owned by all countries in order to implement the whole issue of migrating sharks. We are now initiating our own national plan as a country to implement that. Moving forward, we want to finalize this plan and also allocate resources to implement that plan. That's a short brief, honorable members, on the MOU on sharks. The next slide talks about the the CBD itself, the MOU on the countries in the CBD, we call it South-South Cooperation. It's an initiative by developing countries to be able to debate their own issues. The countries are involved in South Africa, India, Brazil, and also China has joined that. Because we are developing countries, we seem to have our own issues that want to influence the agenda of the convention. Hence, there's this MOU. But the small challenge is about Secretariat to deal with this convention. We still need to convince the CPT Secretariat to manage this MOU on South-South Cooperation. Therefore, we'll be following up with the CPT Secretariat in order for them to provide Secretariat on this. And also, we have an political opinion on this. We're happy with this South-South cooperation, because it does assist us to cooperate on issues that are affecting us as developing nations. The next slide, which is slide 16, honorable members, is about COP 10 on the United Nations Convention to Combat Desertification. Is the one we spoke about earlier when there was a question around issues of land management. They normally refer to this as an African COP also, because most of the desertification problems are in Africa. Therefore, issues of soil erosion are discussed under this convention. South Africa developed a national action program. All the working for projects that we implement are part of NEP. Because working for wetlands, working for water, working on fire, those are programs that are geared to issues of to deal with the land degradation. Now we're at a stage of reviewing our NEP. Because we've been implementing the NEP in the last 10 years, now we're reviewing it to look at new issues. Even the issues of climate change adaptation, you will see in the new NEP. Because when you talk adaptation, it's about dealing with land matters under adaptation chapter in the climate change implementation. Therefore, the NEP is starting to look at those new issues that are developing. We have been requested many times by the Secretariat of this convention to host what they call CRIC. CRIC is a committee for the review of the implementation of the convention. It's a meeting of senior officials of countries who will prepare documents and positions for the main COP. We are considering this. We will, of course, go to cabinet once we decide we have resources to request that we host this. Of course, we'll also inform the committees of parliament anyone that's falling under this. But in packaging this life, let me my part, apologies for that. This convention is about migrating species. To deal with issues or implications of environment that are caused by poor management of these species. If I can make an example, I'll leave sharks, talk to bees. There's a bird called Peshwell, which is in our coastal areas. That bird eats insects and plants. It's omnivorous. They use that language. But once it migrates in winter, go to West Africa, because the environment is degraded there, there's a lot of pig farming there. People start feeding it with pig viscera, intestines. It eats those things. When it comes back, the behavior has changed. It's carnivorous now. It becomes a problem to our other marine birds. We start eating the chicks of those birds. There are the issues that on migrating species we look at. Even with turtles, you look at turtles that are going to other waters, you make sure that they are conserved well. Therefore, the issue of this bird coming back, it becomes a problem now when it comes back. Therefore, this whole relationship around this convention is to look at those species that are migrating. There are range states who discuss these issues of common interest. There's been an adoption of the interim strategic plan for 2012-2014. And then we want to shape the process of this strategic plan. We participated in the strategic plan as a country in the working groups. We want now to allocate resources in implementing this convention, as we have done it in the past. Therefore, we are considering, as I said earlier, hosting the scientific council meeting in the Africa region late in 2013. Therefore, for us to influence as a country, hence we need to participate so that our agenda is always there. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I think
thank you, Honourable Chair. I will finalise and I will be quickly touch on climate change and then move on to the chemicals and the sustainable development. Honourable members would be very familiar with what happened at COP17 in Durban, so probably not necessary to go into detail, but to say that certainly from a strategic importance perspective, it was about securing the multilateral rules and commitments through a second commitment period of the Kyoto Protocol. It was also about decisions to operationalize the various institutional arrangements that had been agreed in Cancun the year before, and that includes institutional arrangements for adaptation, institutional arrangements for technology. There was a forum on response measures and a whole series of transparency governance arrangements in respect of countries reducing their CO2 emissions. There was also the operationalization of the Green Climate Fund and agreement on the framework and the Durban platform for the negotiation of a legal regime applicable to all parties by 2015 to come into effect by 2020, and of course that is what COP18 will be focusing on extensively, to ensure that the Durban platform is bedded down and that the process of negotiation continues apace. And the Minister will be travelling extensively, as I understand, in the next couple of weeks, the basic ministerial, the major economy forum, to ensure that the necessary political engagement takes place before COP18, so that we have a successful meeting in Qatar. So that was the climate change. And the chemicals and waste, there are a number of international agreements, and that's now on slide 19. 22. the Stockholm Convention on Persistent Organic Pollutants is a convention that deals with those pollutants that are they are long-lasting within the environment. They accumulate within the bodies of animals and people, for that matter. And they are referred to as the Dirty Dozen. They are the pollutants that have such long names that it's not that easy to pronounce them individually. One of the key issues here in terms of strategic importance for South Africa is that DDT is one of these the so-called Dirty Dozen chemicals. South Africa uses DDT for malaria control, and so it's important for us to secure an exemption from DDT phase out until such time as South Africa has found an alternative that is as effective as DDT. This convention is also significant to us because we are the largest importer of chemicals within Africa. And given the fact that this convention is about phase out of certain chemicals, we do need to keep pace with the negotiations. What is also important is that South Africa hosts the Africa Institute, which is the Institute for English-speaking African countries that focuses on chemicals management, including phase out of chemicals, the issue of transboundary management of chemicals, and also the question of information exchange or prior informed consent where chemicals are exported or imported between countries. So the key outcomes relate to support for the Africa Institute hosted by South Africa. Also, a number of substances were banned, and we successfully opposed the phasing out of DDT, or we achieved an exemption to this. In respect of the Rotterdam Convention, and that is slide 20, this is the Rotterdam Convention on Prior Informed Consent, and this convention focuses not on phase-out, but on ensuring that there is communication between parties, communication between importers and exporters, in particular, one of the issues that has been problematic in this convention is crocodile asbestos. Zimbabwe mines crocodile. Canada is another big miner of crocodile. Canada has been very effective in blocking any kind of listing of crocodile asbestos for prior informed consent, and unfortunately, this has been going on for at least 5 years. This particular matter was once again deferred to COP6. There were a number of listings, none of which are problematic for South Africa. Before we do the preparation, or when we are doing the preparation of the position for South Africa, going into the Rotterdam or the Stockholm Convention, we engage and coordinate with the Department of Health, with the Department of Agriculture, with the Department of Trade and Industry to make sure that South Africa's interests are covered in respect of many substances that relate to our farming industry, for example, relate to the work of the Department of Health or relate to imports and exports. So that is broadly, there were no follow-up actions in respect of the Rotterdam Convention for South Africa. On the slide 21, the Basel Convention on the Control of Transboundary Movements of Hazardous Waste and their Disposal. This really is about this convention controls the generation, management, and transboundary movement of hazardous waste. The Africa Institute is also relevant in this case in the sense that it covers the Basel, the Stockholm, and the Rotterdam conventions, and so it's focusing for those countries that are part of the Africa Institute on what funding support is needed to enable African countries to effectively manage hazardous waste and to effectively control the transport. particular outcomes of the convention meeting this year was the technical guidelines on mercury, on managing cement kilns, on waste tires, and on waste associated with persistent organic pollutants. These are international technical guidelines that are drafted for the use of countries in their own national work, and South Africa uses these as indicative for the work that we might be doing nationally. Another of the issues that comes up quite strongly under the Basel Convention is the question of dismantling and ships and the environmentally sound management of the waste associated with dismantled ships. And one of the actions was engaging with South Africa Ports Authority and the South African Marine Safety Association to monitor ship dismantling in South Africa. Slide 22 relates to the Montreal Protocol, which deals with ozone-depleting substances and specifically with protection of the ozone layer. And you will recall that some years ago, CFCs, the chlorofluorocarbons, CFCs, were rapidly phased out because they were identified as a reason for a growing hole in the ozone layer above the Arctic and the Antarctic. These were replaced by HCFCs, the hydrochlorofluorocarbons. And in fact, some of these HCFCs have now been found to have quite high global warming potential and are now part of the discussions in the climate change negotiations. Main issue here in these negotiations was about the replenishment of the multilateral fund to support developing countries in their phase-out of CFCs and HCFCs and sourcing alternative substances. Of course, this is quite relevant for South Africa because of the mining industry and because of the air conditioning in the mining industry, especially at these layers, which requires HCFCs for the air conditioning. On slide 23, we move on to the Commission on Sustainable Development. This was the final meeting, thematic area meeting, which was negotiated as the final session during the World Summit on Sustainable Development. There were 9 sessions, thematic sessions, that were identified to be taken forward for the Commission on Sustainable Development. The themes here were transport, chemicals, sustainable consumption and production, and waste management and mining. They were quite controversial themes. The meeting was extremely difficult and in the end did not secure an outcome. It did, however, get agreement on the global senior framework for sustainable consumption. So this is a global framework. There is an Africa framework for sustainable consumption and production, which falls under this overarching global tenure framework. I think what was important about CSD 19 was that in the margins of CSD 19 was the preparation for Rio Plus 20, and that was successful. I have another 2 slides. The Global Environmental Ministerial Forum took place, and this is the UN Forum for Environmental Governance Issues. Here the discussions were on Rio Plus 20 in particular. And then, of course, every year there are the SADC meetings, the SADC Summit, for example, and the African Union Summit, which do not only deal with environmental issues, they deal with an array of issues, but these are the forums that we need to take through any environmental issues. And in the last year, these forums in particular focused on the COP17 preparations and the Rio Plus 20 preparations. And then finally, there's the African Ministerial Conference on Environment, and Minister has just come back from Arusha for the ANSEM meeting of this year. And the ANSEM last year was also focusing on COP17 and the European. So, Honourable Chair, it's quite a mouthful, but as you can see, there are numbers of international agreements that the Parliament is responsible and focused on. Thank you.
thank you very much, Minister. We don't have time to finish your business. Our last meeting for the term. So now we need to finish also our other things. Yes. So that's why we say that they must summarize.
Yes.
Yes. Honourable members, do you have some clarity, few clarity, please, because we don't have time. Because there's another situation that we need to. Yes, Honourable Mukoro, Honourable Mukoro.
Yeah, Chair, thank you very much. It does seem that this is a very difficult subject to deal with. I'm not going to ask questions. I'm just going to ask question of relationship between the developed countries and the developing countries. In all these requirements, that seems to be not just something to pick up. Is the relationship between the two worlds there to be able to one day reach some understanding for possible implementation of all these requirements?
Thank you.
Thanks, Chairperson. Mine is on slide 40. This is the signing of MOU because of the year of immigratory check. Since all the countries are having what we call certain radius to govern, what will happen to those ships migrating to a no man's land and are being poached there? How do we conserve them? In signing of our MU, is there any clause which govern that type of poaching in that no man's in the deep sea? I mean to say, I can put it in the deep sea.
Okay.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. In respect of the question about the relationship between the developed and developing countries in these negotiations, it is always a difficult relationship. The issues are different under the different conventions, but in general there is a push by developed countries for developing countries to strengthen their environmental frameworks, regulatory frameworks, and there is a very strong push back by developing countries to retain their policy space for development and also to seek finance, technological and capacity building support for any of the work that they may need to be doing in respect of putting in place a whatever the environmental regulatory framework may be. And it differs. It differs for biodiversity, it differs for climate change, it differs for sustainable development, it differs for chemicals. In the climate change context, which is the one that I'm slightly more familiar with, Honourable Member would be quite familiar with some of the discussions that were taking place in COP16, in COP17, and now again leading up to COP18, about the extent of support that countries require. For example, President Zuma at Copenhagen made a statement of our intention to reduce our emissions, but that intention is conditional on the extent to which we receive finance or technology support or capacity building support from developed countries. In most cases, these conventions are framed, but the negotiations in framing these conventions have provided certain obligations to the general obligations that are relevant to all parties, but then there would be specific obligations relevant to, for example, developed countries in respect of supporting developing countries in implementation. So I hope that that helps on the question.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions? Okay, just and then we will answer each of that one. What resources will need to be allocated for the implementation of the MOU on the conservation of the migratory shafts.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Just only one response. The relationship is governed by you have regimes that are legally binding, you have reports that are published to support, so that there could be a report, some will call it a global outlook. And also some of these conditions are managed by decisions. You know, the decision of parties that urge parties to do certain things. Therefore, parties should report back to the courts. You will have an element of blaming and shaming because they will list parties who have submitted their report. They will also list parties who have reviewed their action plans. Therefore, that relation is governed in that fashion. But the issue of polarization of issues between the developed and the developing is existing on each and every convention. But there's only rules of procedure, things about consensus, some about voting, they differ. Is how this whole global debate is being handled. The question on sharks, I'm not a marine specialist, I was presenting on behalf of my community, but the high seas are managed, there's a law of the sea. You also get commissions, like whaling commission. But one thing I'm aware of, the high seas and a lot of steam, depending on what technology we have, we take big boats to get there. So there are countries who are able to go deep sea because of their technology. I think what we can do, Chair, is to respond in writing. I'll consult the colleagues who are experts in this area, because I'm a vehicle. The resources we can share are part of our interior process. Hence, you must have the international plan where obligations are agreed as part of the MOU. You need your national plan to say when those species enter the waters, how are you going to deal with them. Hence, we have an international plan and also a national plan. We normally allocate resources to our interior process.
Thank you very much. I think we must proceed. Okay. Thank you very much.
May I just ask that, without hijacking, just on the last question, that's but one, should we ask quickly, even though we'll send the response, the UNCLOS process, UNCLOS, I don't know if you want. Yeah, if you can just touch on that, why is it? Because that's the intention to protect, those kinds of activities, which was the target, sustainable development, so you have that right now.
Straightforward and quite quick.
about the amendment to Annex B of the Kyoto Protocol to include Belarus. Now, Belarus is a country that was previously part of the Soviet Union, and with the breakup of the Soviet Union in 1991, a number of countries found themselves no longer part of the Kyoto Protocol. Now, Annex B of the Kyoto Protocol is nothing more than a listing of all the countries that are party to the Kyoto Protocol, and it's a listing of their specific emission reduction commitments. And Belarus has made a submission to the Conference of the Parties of the, under the United Nations Framework Convention to be included in this Annex B. The Kyoto Protocol sets out detailed requirements as to how any kind of amendment to the protocol or to its annexes take place. And this requires that entry into force of such an amendment can only take place after three quarters of all parties to the convention have ratified the amendment. And of course, every country has their own process for ratification of an international amendment. So, for example, for South Africa, it's Section 231 of the Constitution, which specifies the process for any kind of amendment to an international instrument. That means that it has to go through cabinet, it has to go through parliament, and then finally we have to deposit the instrument of ratification. So, Cornelia, is there a presentation? Well, honourable members have got the presentation before you, so perhaps it might be the easiest just to use the presentation available for you. I think you would also have the very short memorandum, the explanatory memorandum before you. And really, I'll just take you through the presentation. It says that on the second slide, that the Republic of Belarus proposed to amend and accede to the Kyoto Protocol and to assume a legally binding quantified emission reduction commitment of 5% below their 1990 emission levels. Now, of course, in reality, given the fact that most of those countries suffered a very severe economic decline, Belarus has already achieved this 5% reduction. In which case, what their main interest is being able to use the flexibility mechanisms in the Kyoto Protocol and to trade any of the certified emission reductions that they have. In order for this amendment to enter into force, we have to deposit an instrument of acceptance. And as I said, the amendment shall enter into force for those parties having accepted it on the 90th day after the date of receipt by the depository, which is posted at the UNFCCC. The provisions of the Kyoto Protocol, as I've said, they set out specific requirements for how to amend any annexes. The Conference of the Parties, in fact, adopted the amendment at, which was in Decision 2 of COP-MOP 2, which is, in fact, 3 years ago, 4 years ago. And all it does, as you can see on page 3, all it does is it adds the name Belarus, and it adds the quantified emission limitation or reduction commitment, which is the percentage of base year as Belarus and at The advantage is simply that the Republic of Belarus will comply with the provisions of the Kyoto Protocol and will assume a quantified emission reduction commitment. The advantages for South Africa are that this is an additional party that is making the commitment to be part of the Kyoto Protocol. You will recall that we've had some rather alarming notifications from Japan, for example, from Canada, who made their intentions clear that they would not be signing up to the second commitment period. So certainly Belarus, and probably there will be other such amendments that come through from other states to be included in Annex Shelley, and certainly from our perspective, this is a positive movement in the right direction. And Honourable Chair, it's as straightforward as that.
Thank you very much. Very straightforward, Honourable Woman. I don't know if anyone wants some clarity. Honourable Woman.
Yeah, thank you. Why this not here today, after the day of receipt, and also on the ratification? They said after the verdict of 19th day. Why 19th day is so crucial?
Honourable members, this was part of the negotiation, and I think 19th day is 3 months. So it's to ensure that any processes that are being followed nationally to conclude the ratifications are fully concluded, and that any further administrative requirements relating to the depositing of the instrument of acceptance simply has time to go through the system. So simply to give parties and to give the UNFCCC secretariat the necessary time to conclude the administrative arrangement.
Okay, thank you very much. I don't know if the minister wants to say something, because this is the last we're going to release you after that. After your talk, and then we will submit a few comments, and then so much give you some
few minutes.
Thank you very much. I really wouldn't like to take much of your time, Honourable Chair. I must apologise for firstly arriving late. I started in another engagement and also still be running to another just now. So I thought that it's important just to come and be part of this committee. But on the basis of that understanding, I just want to make a plea, Chair, that the activities of the Select Committee are very important for all of us. And just as they are, the NA Committee are also important. And therefore, it would be quite helpful if we probably just compare notes from time to time, so that we don't find ourselves being absent in this committee. It's not good enough. We would like to attend, but more often than not, you will find that whenever we hear about or learn about a date of a meeting, it's either that we did many, many things that we have been talking to and about. And for instance, just now as I leave here, cabinet tomorrow, I'm going to Brazil to this basic meeting. Coming there for 2 days, so I'm going to Mass and to UNGA. So there are just many international engagements on the card, water issues on the ground, which we need to attend to. So the need for being here, we request that, and I'm pleading that it really be quite coordinated between ourselves, so that we are not at all absent. And the same applies between myself and the Deputy Minister, because we almost everywhere at all times. So notices, yes, we do get, but it's important that we just compare notes about some of the topics that we may have to do or die, be present. And also just dates on the chair. which we can just come and spend with ourselves to talk about things that are happening in the department, whether it's water, whether it's whatever. So that's my thing. Secondly, I think that it's going to be important that with this discussion that we are holding now, one lift up a few things. There is a lot of lobbying that's happening by other countries. The question honourable member asked about the discussions between the developed and the powers between, or issues between the developed and developed countries. We more often than not find ourselves as public representatives being lobbied by other countries. So it's important that we also close that loophole of knowing which country views issues differently, and that we, for instance, on issues of access to benefit sharing, which we have signed the protocol for, we need to ratify. What are the views of the EU, for instance? What are the views of the on the chemical protocol convention that was actually signed or signature with different signatories? Issues that are coming out of there also have an impact on some of the things that we are discussing, for instance, at RioPlus20, the chemicals issue. We are saying that, amongst others, we need to have UNEP upgraded and being upgraded to be in Nairobi. Everybody agrees in the EU, for instance. What they are not saying to us is that, yes, we are agreeing with you that UNEP must be upgraded, but what they are not saying is that the department, especially those areas that use with chemicals, will remain in Switzerland, will remain in some places. That's what they are not saying. So we need to unravel some of these issues and be able to help lobby on behalf of our customers. So there's a need for very thorough discussion in some instances. These issues of access to benefit sharing, they were arguing most of the time about them voting as one to all 27 countries because of one vote, meaning that even those who are saying no to a vote being because they are EU members, then they have to just be voted for by one person as we are one country, one vote. So we did say that no to that thing until we at least have succeeded. Now we have passed by, but I'm saying in short, there are many things that we still need to just look underneath. What line under so that we can be able to, even in this talk, talk for the separate UNF team. Why are we saying so, honourable members? Because we also expect that you will be participating in some of the events, COPs that are coming, COPs, CBD that's coming now in October. We are not sure how Parliament will coordinate, but it's important that at least you reflect on that matter as well. What is the time? There's also COP18 that's coming in Qatar, Doha, in November, December. You need to reflect on that as Parliament, how you get part of the Parliament, because there are parliamentary processes as well in all those talks. Then next year's COP as well on fighting, which is the most difficult one, by the way. That always fights, you find, if you want to see the fight between developing countries amongst ourselves, is on that one. Kenya saying no utilization of natural resources. In other words, we can't use our ivory, we can't use our natural resources because of the NGO sector that's operating there, because of how they are being paid to ban this ivory, to ban whatever they have done, all those stocks, and then get paid for that. So we are not in that position, and so there's a bit of a division when we come to that. This is one of the things that we're trying to deal with when we had AMSEL meetings this past 3 days. So we also try to close those gaps between ourselves as the African continent and the African world. And again, we have a role there on the members to play on the continent to help us close those two problems. Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Honourable Minister. Thank you very much. I think before we just give these our comments, we must first adopt these arguments, and then I will ask the members to adopt first in front of the department. I will start with the international environmental instrument. That is the yellow report. Any mover? The first agreement.
spending 1.5 times the world's resources for anything that promotes it, but I would have to consult with my NA in the National Assembly, you know, with regard to these protocols.
So yeah, we are going not to be part of two or just this agreement. So you are going to conduct it. Can I read the report first before you go to consult the Select Committee on Land and Environmental Affairs, having been briefed by the Department of Environmental Affairs on the yearly report to Parliament on International Environmental Agreement 2011-2012, tabled in terms of Section 26(1) of the National Environmental Management Act 1998, Act Number 107 of the 1998, referred to it, reports that it has concluded its deliberation thereon and compares with the report to be considered. Is there anyone want to read? Is there anything want to consult your party on that? Honorable Macbeth?
Even our party, one of those things we have to consult, because we cannot just simply jump in the adoptions. Thank you.
So it means all of these reports will go and consult. When are we going to be ready? Because now this is the last meeting for our committee for this term. When are you going to come back to us and say that you are ready?
As soon as our consultant, just in case they want to put some, you know, they might put a clause, as soon as possible, within the next day or so.
Honorable, I'm not going to say that you must do this, but we have gave the documents on last Thursday, and everybody, we have got time to consult your party, but I'm not going to dispute what you are saying. Also, honorable, let's shelve this, and then we'll wait for them. Honorable, what are you saying?
No, within a day.
I don't get that. Put on the mic.
Within a day, I'll come back to you and make sure that we agree on this.
Thank you. in principle.
Hmm. Okay.
If I was in the other Commission of National Assembly, I would say I'm a member. Now I'm speaking as a member, but I used to be a member of this. I'm no longer a member of the Select Committee, and I was still at a provincial level. Speaking as a non-member, I just wanted to remind honourable members of the objective of the tabling of this issue instrument here. In the slide that was tabled here, it says that we are doing this in accordance with Act Number 107, 1998, Chapter 6 on the International Obligations and Agreements, Paragraph 26, Subsection 1, where it says the Minister must report to Parliament once a year, regarding international environmental instruments for which she is responsible. And then we say the report was finalized and tabled in Parliament on the 19th April 2012, which was quite a while ago. It's now almost October. We did that once a year. What is the objective of this? These are instruments that have already been adopted at international level. They are outcomes of meetings. In some instances, the UNFCCC has got 184 countries of the world that have already agreed, after thorough negotiations and heavy negotiations, on certain things that are here, which issues we are already implementing. The objective of the lawmaker, as I understand it here, is that we shouldn't have lawmakers in Parliament left outside the loop, not knowing exactly what issues are being dealt with. That's why we need to table this report. Now, I'm not sure if this report can, we can come back and say what happened in UNFCCC talks at COP17, let's say COP16, should now look like this, after this discussion, after consulting with the party. Because that meeting has long passed. What we are doing here is to report that Parliament is not left in the dark. That's simply why this discussion is here. It's not an academic exercise. If I was still also in NCOP, I would have felt that it is important that I know in writing, in documents like this in detail, what transpired in COP17. And it is for that reason that we are also saying that honourable members need to be a part of the meetings that are coming, meaning that parliamentarians are not excluded even at those talks. We are going to COP18, I said. We are going to COP10. We are going to CDG, where honourable members will still be represented and actually also formulate a mandate and say, our part of briefing parliamentarians here last year was COP17, which parliamentary meeting and took a decision to say we support those talks. So there's a pre-process and there's a post-process. This is a post-process. So I'm not sure if we say we're going to consult, whether when we come back from a party discussion we can say, let's undo what happened in COP17 or COP16. I don't think so. It's really, I thought I should clarify that part.
Thank you, Honourable Minister. I just to maintain your position on Derek.
Chair, I hear what the Honourable Minister had to say, but I will ratify the agreements, but provided if there's any, if you know, there's come to a debate or discussion in the House, that they want not an amendment, but a clause or whatever put in, you know, not to, obviously you can't change the international agreements. But just to say this or comment on that, that I have the right to do that. Yes.
Another
point? Yeah, I think there is a proposal that in principle, let us adopt the report on the basis of what the Honourable Minister just said.
Mm-hmm.
It seems there's no more space, and our responsibility is to adopt the report, and therefore I
After the explanation, but I we are not going to say that now we are going to undo what has been decided. just to have a unanimous agreement on the party. If there will be sometimes a debate in the house, that definitely I will have to bring it out.
But in principle, Umama Kadamos is for adoption, and also Honorable Mporo seconded our set. And then after that, we'll see what is going to happen. But Honorable, I think we'll take that question for Honorable, and also Honorable Mporo seconded that. So as the Minister explained, there's nothing that is going to happen because this thing is a post. It's not a precinct that is going to happen now. Thank you, Honorable Member. Okay. I think the second one is the report on platform from Land and Environment Affairs on the Nagoya Protocol on access to genetic resources and the fair and equitable sharing and benefits arising from their utilization through the Convention on Biological Diversity dated in September 2012. The Select Committee on Land and Environmental Affairs, having considered the request for approval by Parliament of the Nagoya Protocol on access to genetic resources and the fair and equitable sharing of benefits arising from their utilization to the Convention on Biological Diversity, referred to it, recommend that the Council, in terms of Section 23231, Subsection 2 of the Constitution, approve the said agreement. Report to be considered. Is there any mover? Then? Honorable Mkoro, seconded? Any seconded? I need the second on a report. There are four honorable members who have not yet finished them. I see that you are tired.
No,
there are
four,
and we need to do it correctly.
Yeah.
If it means there's left to us, we can't say it. And the third one, the Select Committee, the report of the Select Committee on Land and Environmental Affairs on the African Convention on the Conservation of the Nature and Natural Resources, dated Algiers Convention 2003, dated 18 September 2012. The Select Committee on the Land and Environment, having considered the request for the approval by Parliament on the Convention and the Conservation of Nature and Natural Resources, referred to it, recommend that the Council, in terms of Section 231, Subsection 2 of the Constitution, approve the said agreement. Is there any mover? Honorable Makadla and Honorable Makube.
No, that one I have reason to want to move.
Oh, okay. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
This is the last one. Yeah, on Makubela 70. The last one is a report on Select Committee on Land and Environmental Affairs on the acceptance of the amendment of Annexa C of Kyoto Protocol to the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change, dated 18 September 2012. The Select Committee on Land and Environmental Affairs, having considered the request for approval by Parliament of the acceptance of the amendment of Annexa B of the Kyoto Protocol to the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change, referred to it, recommend that the Council, in terms of Section 231, Subsection 2 of the Constitution, approve the said agreement. Report should be considered. Any mover? Honorable Ones, Honorable Mkoro. Thank you very much, Honorable Members. I think we have not done anything wrong, just to make things clear.
Mm-hmm.
So there's nothing from the Minister has us to clarify that. Thank you very much, Minister, to clarify that. This means that we'll be trying to get another meeting if we have not Thank you very much. I think before we allow Minister to leave the room, I think Minister, let's take this opportunity to thank you as a committee. We started this committee in 2009, we are still continuing with the committee, but since then we never had any, in fact we are not buying your home, but just because you are here. We didn't get any problem from your department. They respect us as the SOP. You know, you find sometimes other departments respect the portfolio committee than us. If they come to us, they just brainwash. They don't give us anything. As a result, I don't remember any time that we have changed your department under your leadership. So thank you very much. As much as you respect us, as a committee, we pay respect to the department. I don't know, but as a committee, we feel very great for your leadership in this committee. We explain if you are not going to come, and they come in time, they give documents in time, they explain whatever. So we'll pass that to your officials to say that thank you. This is not the end of the term, but we feel that we are here, and we consider what we are saying, that we must have space where there are some things that we need to want to deal with you, but as you know, the SOP is up and about, so, but we will try to get space to speak with you. Thank you very much, Honourable Community. Okay.
Thank you.
We won't have another business. We are not going to finish.
There's a few people.